Welcome to Shakespeare Alive, a podcast from the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust. My name is Anjana Chohan. This podcast hosts conversations with people from all over the world who work or engage with Shakespeare across all sorts of media and genres. In this episode, I'm joined by the power couple behind the YouTube phenomenon that is the Break-A-Leggers. So Nathan and Simon Dowling have become what I'm going to call celebrities in the theatrical world with their raw, on-the-spot reviews of productions filmed in the intervals and immediately after each show. They have an incredible following on social media and they have fantastically warm personalities. And I know that their mission is to celebrate theatrical experience and to encourage conversations about theatre making and, most importantly, theatre accessibility. So it's a very great privilege to welcome Nathan and Simon Dowling to Shakespeare Alive. Welcome.
Thanks, you're amazing too. Thank you for having us.
Can you tell me what got you into theatre? Now, Simon, why don't you start us off?
It's what gets a lot of young people into theatre, and that's the family experience of going to pantomime every year. And I can vividly remember my first ever panto and fell in love with a story unfolding in front of me with real people acting it out, specifically the audience engagement. And I think it was that moment that sticks out most vividly in my mind.
Nathan, how about you?
I think that's quite different for me, actually, because I guess we're not very academic as a family. We have dyslexia in our family, so I had learning challenges and difficulties growing up. The one place that I did find my vocation, I guess, of expression was through drama. You're entering a space, you don't have to study and read, you're just expressing yourself. And fell into then doing like a BTEC in performing arts and then going into a career as an actor because it was one of the only skills open to me, really. So I guess that was my first introduction to theatre as a place to fit in, a place to express myself.
But theatre is therefore very an empowering experience, both being part of it and watching it for both of you then.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really clear distinction, actually, that my journey now with theatre is very different to then. Then it was very much about myself and being a part of it and expressing myself. For me now, I think it's very much about being taken on a journey.
It's quite strange, actually, because your journey with theatre started as performer and has sort of developed into audience member, whereas mine started as audience member. And since meeting Nathan, I've since gone on to direct and perform. It's almost in some respects, we've swapped roles, but I think what has always remained consistent in both of our lives is just a thorough enjoyment.
Can you talk to me a bit about what Break-A-Leggers is for the benefit of the audience who haven't come across you before?
The Break-A-Leggers is two approaching middle-aged gay married men talking a load of drivel about what they think about theatre.
The show they've just seen,
yeah. As an immediate reaction to a production that they've just watched. And that production might be in London's West End, or it might be at a regional theatre around the country, or it might be in Stratford-upon-Avon. And I think our USP is, firstly, really honest, unfiltered opinion about the show. We film our reviews straight outside the theatre as soon as the curtain goes down.
On location. Immediate thoughts.
You know, whereas a print journalist would have a notepad, perhaps return home, take some time to mull over what they've seen and
articulate each word, yeah. Rewrite a sentence, what spell check, go back in and go, that doesn't make sense.
We don't do any of that.
No.
What we are is completely raw. And what we are also are people that don't make any money out of what we do. It's not a job for us. It is completely the unfiltered opinion of two theatre lovers.
What we also try and do is a community. We want to link people. So I guess the Break-A-Leggers is a bit of a platform for other people as well to express their views. which they do, some quite strongly, all of which are valid and we welcome. So I think in terms of the break a leg, it's not only is it just us commenting on it, but I think it's linking together the people who go and see theatre and have a passionate view on it as well.
Yeah, that's the lovely thing about having a comment section underneath the video and the social media interaction that we have. If you pick up a newspaper, it's very insular. It's such a isolated experience reading and not having a feedback method, whereas our fellow leggers will often talk in our comment section with each other about what they've seen, talk at us, and we'll respond.
So this is a really positive side of using social media to engage with theatrical audiences and theatre goers. You have a great community of leggers, as you call them. For the benefit of our audience, how do people become leggers?
So yeah, you can become a fellow legger by heading over to YouTube. If you pop the Breaker Leggers into the search bar, you'll see a little...
Was that the Breaker Leggers?
The Breaker... Let me just spell it. the Breaker Leggers. And you'll see a little symbol, a little red curtain with BAL emblazoned over it. Wherever you see that logo, you'll find us. Subscribe on YouTube and over on Instagram and Twitter as well. If you search the Breaker Leggers, you'll find us and you'll be able to start the conversation about pieces of theatre that you've seen.
So over time, I'm assuming you've ironed out some of the kinks in how you approach your theatre reviewing practice, as it were.
Oh boy, have we. I think practice makes perfect, and I don't think we're at perfect yet. You have to go wrong a number of times, and only by going wrong do you figure out, okay, what do we need to do next? And we have many a debrief session. In fact, looking back at some of our earlier reviews.
Or trying to avoid looking back at our early reviews,
which they're cringe-worthy. They're awful. Yeah. We're like, oh my goodness, at the time our intention was right, but they're not us. We're trying to perform, or we're trying to be something, we're trying to do something. There was a time where we used to script the openings because Meg Simon is really good in getting like the information we need.
On the research book.
Yeah, and there was a time where we'd almost learn it as a script. We'd have to learn it as a script. And it's watching them, they do come across as scripted, even though they have all the information, and we'd have to do take after take after take where I kept getting it wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
And as a result, you lose a bit of us and our personalities. And as we sort of started doing more videos and started to get feedback from the people that were watching us, we realised they liked us as people as much as what we were saying. And when we did disagree, or we had little, because sometimes we do, there's two of us reviewing the show, and sometimes I can get something from a piece which will pass you by entirely, and vice versa. And it was those spats and those debates that people really liked, because they could see our personalities. So then we started to scrap a lot of the scripted things and just be more us, and as a result, more relaxed and enjoying the process more as well, actually.
I think that's the thing. When we go to the theatre, although we review theatre, we want it to be good.
Yeah, we just want it to
be good. We're giving up our time. We don't know what good looks like, but we just want to be engaged. We want to be taken on that journey.
Yeah.
And that's always the tricky part then, when we are reviewing it, and when that doesn't happen, articulating just what it is that hasn't connected with us. And at the same time, we know that it's a form of art, and it's subjective.
So subjective,
and because it didn't resonate with us, it doesn't mean that there's other people that it did. Do you know what I mean? We can't say who is and who isn't going to enjoy it.
There are some easy quick wins when it comes to how to stage a production that can be applied to Shakespeare's works as much as everybody's works, but it's that fine line of always maintaining as theatre reviewers that this is just our opinion on what we think of a piece. It doesn't mean that if you go and see it, you're going to have the same experience.
And I think a downside is our reviews can be quite long.
Yeah.
Looking at our earlier stuff, they were quite short and succinct, but I think as we've gone through our journey, it's that age-old question that we often say we don't like, which is, did you enjoy the show?
Yes.
Which is a closed leading question, and it's so limited because there are so many areas to a show we've kind of identified. We don't just talk about the show, we need to talk about the piece, we need to talk about the lighting, the direction, this production, the movement on stage, projection. Like, there's so many different elements that... Did you enjoy the show? So we've kind of found over time that we are breaking down many of those elements. But yes, we definitely learn and are learning as we go along.
Can I spin it just one way, just to sort of sum it up and say, it's not always how we've ironed out the kinks, it's how the kinks have ironed out us. Getting feedback from our community of fellow leggers has really shaped what we do and how we approach it. Because, you know, we talk about theatre needs to be an experience that's enjoyable. So does spending 15, 20 minutes of your time watching our videos.
One of the journeys we've been on as well, is a key thing, is the integrity idea as well, integrity argument. Very early on, we were getting invited in to see productions by people. And then what happens if we don't enjoy that performance? And do we satisfy the people who are inviting us in and help to promote the show? Or do we give our honest opinion and potentially never get invited in? Who are we going to serve? Productions want to put bums on seats. They need to generate a revenue. And so I guess the media they produce promotes the show. Quite often we'll be at press nights and there'll be cameras outside the theatre ready to capture the audience reactions as they leave the theatre. And sometimes we get asked, oh, do you want to give your comments on camera? And we have to say no, because we don't think what we're going to say is going to help.
It's not going to serve them.
Your production, like what we honestly think about this show. But as an audience member or someone who's potentially coming to the show, all they'll get is the sound bites of the people who enjoyed the show. And ultimately, in the end, what we've decided is, you know, we need to serve our integrity.
Can we talk about Shakespeare a bit?
I think we should.
You see.
Oh, do you need me? Who's this guy? He's dead now.
What was your route to Shakespeare?
At GCSE level at school, I studied Romeo and Juliet. And when you are put into a situation where you've got to academically break down Shakespeare and you've got to dissect it and interpret it, it wasn't a particularly enjoyable experience for me. And I didn't come away from my GCSEs with this absolute passion for the Bard. It wasn't until much later when I started to experience productions of Shakespeare's works that I thought, you know what, this is meant to be entertaining. Like it never, ever came up in the GCSE study that this is meant to be enjoyable. Just felt so sterile.
Yeah, I think the same. Funny what you're saying there. Definitely at school, I think we would have touched on Romeo and Juliet, I think, as a standard. And also Henry V. I specifically, distinctly remember learning the prologue over a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention, a kingdom for a stage, monarchs to act and princes to behold the swelling scenes. I still remember it now. I remember learning it when I was like...
I'm applauding for our listeners on
but it's funny that it's all in there. But I'm similar to Lega Simon, I think that it was brought to me from an academic point of view that I didn't entirely make sense of. So it became a thing that was for clever people and I didn't feel close to.
It's quite alienating.
Yeah, so I think there's almost a bit of a stigma that developed within myself to kind of be a bit switched off to Shakespeare.
Shakespeare's not for me.
Yeah, which was probably broken when I was about 17, 18, when I did an outside production of As You Like It with a local drama group. But I remember looking at the text and it being really alien to me. But then I started to learn it. And then when I threw myself into it and got the emotion, understood it, the two connected. And I was like, wow, actually, this is great. The words are there to carry the emotion. And from an actor's point of view, this text is a great tool for a performer. And then I got it.
Yeah.
It took a bit of time. And I remember specifically as a few weeks into the rehearsal and doing the same bits that I'd done a number of times before. So it's like a penny dropped. It's like, okay, I get it.
What you learned in that moment was something that I never got the experience, because only studying it sort of in English at that time, is that Shakespeare's words were written to be performed. And I think you probably had that moment where you were given the words to act. I never got one in English. Maybe I would have enjoyed it more.
And I broaden that out. I'd say that's any play. You can read a play and it's only, they're written to be performed. It's what's said when nothing is said. It's how it's said. It's in the reactions. So it's very much in performance, which I think I didn't get as a school student. We studied the text.
I know that you're obviously very, very passionate, both of you, about theatre. And you gave a talk at the 2018 English Talks on this very subject. It was called In the Room Where It Happens. In this talk, you quoted some research from Arkansas University, and they were looking at the measurable impact of watching live theatre on students' tolerance, understanding of a play, and their emotional intelligence. So obviously this is something that you too feel strongly about. So what do you think seeing Shakespeare live gives to audiences that a film or perhaps a text just can't do? Why is it so important to be live?
You know, that's a really interesting thing. I think one of the things that always strikes me is that Shakespeare writes about the extremes. It's not mundane. And when we say drama, Shakespeare got drama. So they all die. And if you've got a piece where they all die, we're talking about extreme stuff that so many people die. There's a lot of passion in there to drive people to that extent of action. So I think, first of all, it's almost like escapism in a way to see those things. What drives people to that? What drives them to absolute love? What drives them to absolute revenge? And seeing that on stage is quite, I wouldn't say it's magical, but it's definitely like a wow, real insight into a person's psyche.
For me, it's about that seeing in person that the physical and sometimes visceral response that a situation can bring up in an individual, and not only whoever's experiencing it, but I think about film and I think about its ability with a screen-based medium when you're working on quite a small, relatively small frame space. You are completely at the director's mercy of where that focus is drawn to. So for me, a lot of the time, the person that might be undergoing or experiencing a heightened emotion, such as grief or joy or laughter, I think a lot can be done in the context of that on stage. You're almost given a freedom of where you put your eyes when it comes to the stage that you aren't afforded with the screen. I get much more from looking at the reactions of people that are out of focus or out of frame on a stage, whereas if this was a film, that's where the camera would be pointing. It heightens an entire experience for me, not being constrained to someone else telling me what I should or shouldn't be looking at.
Do you think then theatre is much less of a passive viewing experience, that there's a lot more agency for the audience and a lot more expectation that you have to put some work in as you're watching?
Absolutely. It's a conversation in the arts. I think theatre is definitely a relationship between a physical audience and a physical person or set of people that just doesn't happen when you're looking through a screen.
That's really interesting that you use the idea of it being passive, or is it passive or is it active? And I think you're right, it is absolutely active. Shakespeare specifically as well, if you think about how many of the characters actively engage the audience and talk to the audience. And I think it's the magic of when the actors look out into the audience, into our eyes, they're saying, come on board with us. And I think that's...
They're inviting you into their heads. They're inviting you into their physicality.
This whole idea of being there, being in the room, I guess, where it happens and how you engage with that, that's a classic example that you're not just watching something. It's not just the fourth wall removed. You are being pulled into that world. You are as much a part of that narrative as an audience member when you're addressed in that way.
Okay, we're just going to pause for a quick break.
The Shakespeare Birthplace Trust is a charity that promotes the life, work and times of William Shakespeare in his hometown of Stratford-upon-Avon. We look after five houses associated with Shakespeare and his family. We make freely available an internationally important library, archive and museum collection. We lead new research and we run an award-winning education programme. In light of this podcast, please consider making us a donation. You can do this by visiting shakespeare.org.uk and following the Make a Donation link at the bottom of the homepage. Your support and goodwill really matter to us, and we hope you'll recommend our podcast to your friends.
You're listening to Shakespeare Alive, the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust podcast, and I'm with Nathan and Simon Dowling from the Break a Leggers. You guys review a lot of Shakespeare. I know you go to London and see Shakespeare, you see Shakespeare in Stratford. So what is it that you hope your audiences are taking away from contemporary productions of Shakespeare?
I'd expect them to come away with what they'd want from any theatre, an engaging occasion which made people think. I think we are in this age, depending on where you see theatre, you see it in a different way. If you go to the Globe, it'll be kind of how it was in those times. However, other theatres are producing it in a way that is much more contemporary. I'm thinking of Hamlet with Andrew Scott at the Almeida Theatre, for example, which was very modern with TV screens. So I think it depends on what you want to see and how you want to see it, because ultimately it's the same story. How many times are they doing Hamlet? There's at least three or four productions a year going on. So it's not as if people haven't seen it. To a degree, it is also the context or the concept that a director is going to throw at it to make it different or to try and connect with us in a different way. For me personally, I think as long as it makes sense and I'm engaged, I'm up for the ride.
I think what we're trying to get across to our audiences when we review Shakespeare is that even though they might understand the story, even though the themes of it might be familiar, the way that it is communicated to the audience by the vision of the cast and the creatives can be completely different, which means that you can have a different experience than before. Some people may have seen a specific work of Shakespeare that they didn't enjoy and think that was the problem of the piece. Whereas I think we can demonstrate, and what we try to get across with, sometimes it can be the responsibility of the production. And if you saw it being told in a different way, in a setting, in a situational setting that is resonates with you, and you understand it, and you can project your own, your understanding of that setting, it will reach you in a way that didn't before, maybe. So I think what I always want to say is, don't write Shakespeare off if you've had a bad experience seeing it in one production. You can see it again and have a completely different experience, and it can lift a veil on the piece for you that has maybe remained after the last time that you saw it. That being said, I don't need to see another production of Hamlet. I'm done.
But I think it depends on the production. I think you make a really good point and why you should go and see Shakespeare. For example, we saw Othello at the Globe with Mark Rylance as Iago, a lovely open venue, and it was, in my opinion, okay. We also saw a production of Othello at the National Theatre in the Olivier space.
Rory Kinnear and Adrian Lester.
And Adrian Lester, which was brilliant and a real modernised version,
almost like the Middle East, the war, and a kind of the Gulf War.
Absolutely. It had a completely different feel, and I engaged with that on a different level. And if I'd have judged it on like a production I'd seen before, I would have thought, I'm not really seeing that.
This comes back to your point about different directors and different creatives bringing something new to the table. Yes, it's the same text, but a lot of work goes into people understanding behind the scenes, because one of the criticisms that's often leveled at contemporary productions of Shakespeare is that there's almost too much concept, there's too much conceit slapped onto it. I suppose this is where criticisms around shows being too modern comes from. I don't think people mean that it shouldn't be set in the 21st century. I think what people mean is it becomes distracting.
I think you're absolutely right. I think I do like a context. I do like a different, interesting concept. I do like it seeing things in a different way. And the key thing you're saying there is it needs to serve the core story as opposed to being clever or like, see what I've done here.
Oh, we've got a big budget. Let's put bells and whistles on it.
I'm thinking of the recent production we saw as being concept of The Taming of the Shrew at the RSC, where they switched the male and female characters.
Very challenging piece at the best of times.
And I think it really served to amplify, like when you saw it the other way around, how messed up it is. It's a real messed up piece.
We've got women treating men in the way in the piece men treat women. You think this doesn't wash, you know.
As if it was messed up in the first place. Like this is amplifying it even worse. So I think, and again, that's a concept that people go, oh, I don't know, you messed messing with Shakespeare there. That's not how. But I think that when they get it right, and when it does work, it really does serve to amplify the piece. We saw the tragedy of Richard II at the Almeida with the fantastic Simon Russell Beale, heavily conceptualized, this kind of white box. I think it was one act, 90 minutes straight through. Lots of blood on stage. It's because it's so white, they really amplified the blood going here, there, and everywhere. So visually it was impressive, but I didn't know what was going on.
Didn't know what was
going
on. So
that, for me, was a fail.
So first of all, with Taming of the Shrew, that was Justin Audibert. And I think that particular production, for the audiences that didn't see it, it was gender swapped. So all the men were played by women and all the women were played by men. But the women played men as women rather than playing them as men. And that's a crucial distinction. But I think it was clear from the start, and I think you mentioned this, that there was an agenda. But with the Richard II at the Almeida, that show, to my mind, makes sense if you know that play. And I think this is where the distinction with the audiences comes in. If you're a director trying to appeal to new audiences, you have to tell a story. However, if you're not necessarily interested in new audiences, you're interested in audiences who know this play, who love this play, then actually you've got something else to offer, and there's space for both of those. But you run the risk of alienating audiences.
For me, it's extremely, and we've had this conversation with our fellow legacy before. For me, there's an extreme arrogance of a director that can sit back and say, well, if you didn't understand it, that's because you didn't do your research before coming in.
Or you should have read the program.
Yeah, or like, there's an arrogance to that, because not everyone has the luxury of being able to do that. It's got to just be what those 90 minutes or 2 hours or 2.5 hours are. You need to come at it as that's all these people are going to get. You can't expect your audience to go away and study for 3 years just to access the piece. I don't think that's fair.
I think that there are certain pieces that, if they're based on real things, that they want to inspire you to go out and do some more research, but it doesn't detract from your actual initial engagement with the piece. Mm. It kind of just makes you want to go and...
It can inspire you to want to learn more about, especially with Shakespeare's historical plays. You know, I've been so compelled upon seeing those to go, oh, wow, that's such an interesting period in history. I want to learn about
how much of that actually happened. But
that shouldn't have to come before the piece. It should be as a result of that production.
Is there anything about contemporary productions of Shakespeare that you think works really, really well? I mean, you've talked about maybe conceits and setting it in places or settings that you relate to in some way. But is there anything else that you've seen that you thought, yes, that's right, and I know why that's right, why that works?
The RSC in Stratford do this really well. A real understanding and a real focus given to the music and the score within Shakespeare pieces. I think that does so much to amplify the action in those productions. Also, live dance, actors playing instruments on stage, those elements of just pure, firstly, entertainment, and secondly, when choreography and music are done well, the emotional impact that can have to lift the whole piece, and by lift I don't mean necessarily to have a happiness about it, because I think dance and music can be used to amplify a despair and a sadness too, but they're such powerful tools, and whenever that happens I always am given something extra.
I think what you're talking about there is specific things that heighten an audience member's engagement with the piece, and that's kind of what we've been talking about. It just needs to be engaging. It's not just enough to have good actors. I'm trying to think, one of the things I've always said, you're probably going to hate me for this, is that, and I think it's to do with engagement though, is when they have been cut down to, say, if there's a 3-hour piece that's been cut down to 90 minutes, that always works well for me. But I think it's because the plot points have been kind of put together.
Because
that
you can still
heightens my engagement with it. But then saying that, I have seen longer productions that are 2.5-3 hours that I have also been engaged with. So it's not just about the length of it. It is very much about what is this production doing to engage me.
Because the text, like with Shakespeare, it's like a religious tone to a lot of people. Like, you can't, don't mess with the, oh my God, like, you know, but I think unless it serves the audience. Yeah, you know.
I think it depends on your concept. It depends on what you're doing, whether you keep it in or what production you're going with. So that's, like I say, don't hate me, but I think that's one way that when I've seen productions that have just gone, you know, let's stick to the key points, not like in The Tragedy of Richard II, where you kind of don't
know. They took out anything that would make
still needs to make sense, but something that drives. I'm a big lover of drive through the piece, drive through the narrative, keep us engaged as an audience.
It doesn't mean speed up how quickly you're saying everything. It just means take out the bits that
give us
bumps.
The plot points, give us the dun dun dun, or the EastEnders do, what's gonna happen next, you know, give us the reason to keep on going.
I've literally just realized, because Nathan has an Olivier, right, which is like amazing. But I've just realised that Laurence Olivier, it's as he portrayed Henry V, like that's his costume. I never made the link before, ever, was your first
encounter.
That was your first encounter, wow. And now he has this.
So why do you have an Olivier, Nathan?
That's for my work on Jerry Springer and the Opera, which we did at the National Theatre, then transferred to the Cambridge. Best Supporting Actor in a musical. It was given to the ensemble. There's an ensemble, we were 20 strong. The Olivier panel recognised us, and it was the first and only time since, I understand, time that the panel nominated a whole ensemble for the Best Supporting Role category. And we won it. We got our own little Olivier award.
That's fantastic. Well, many congratulations for that. Do you have a vision for what you want to be doing with Break a Leggers in the future?
It is a labour of love. It really is. And it's a thing that we can afford our time to when the going is good. For the past 2 years, it has really taken over our lives in many respects. But it takes a lot of organisation. It takes a lot of planning, preparation. And it's a big financial commitment as well. I think going forward, it will probably end up being something that takes up less of our time, but as a result, maybe becomes more enjoyable for us.
The Leggers was ultimately a hobby for us. It's just a huge hobby. And I think it's going to stay there. But it's also afforded us massive opportunities. I mean, us talking to you now is a huge opportunity. You spoke about the presentation we gave as part of the English talks. Again, that was a great opportunity. Mm. We get the opportunity to speak to cast members and speak to directors, which is a huge opportunity, which we wouldn't have had if we were just regular theatre goers. Also, I think it was great about the Leggers is our journey with theatre is documented. So in a way, it's nice to have our journey and our love and our passion documented for us to go back to personally, and I guess for other people as well.
Or a specific performance on a specific day, you know, if something's gone wrong or something, and you've been there to document that. Without YouTube videos or bloggers, those things have gone.
I think it's an absolute tragedy that productions, great productions, are lost, that they're only available to the live audience that are able to access them at the time, and we can't see them again. So I like to think that we're kind of paving the way or contributing somewhat
journalists
to our
weird,
craving,
you know,
that production out there.
Also, I think for the future, we have had conversations as well about it would be lovely to use the Break a Leggers Monica to assign to a more production aspect of the work, because we really have enjoyed directing before.
I guess we don't know ultimately. Yeah. We'll keep on doing what we're doing and take opportunities to see who, what, when, why, where.
We've been asking all of our interviewees the same set of questions, which relates to our activity at the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust as the keepers of Shakespeare's legacy. Given that you've seen some of our collections online, was there anything in there that appealed to you, that stood out, that you thought, oh, I'd quite like that?
There are certain pieces which to us were very, very eye-catching. There was one particular, and that was the sculpture of William Shakespeare by Leon T. Usoff, which is very modern, created in 2010, and which visually immediately striking, but then reading about it, I actually fell in love with it even more. Now, and it was visually appealing because it speaks to the profanity of the question, to be or not to be, which in these really mentally questioning times, they're mentally straying at the moment. And the fact that Shakespeare's portrayed with a split in his head that opens up that question of life and death and purpose, but is surrounded by the names of some of his most accomplished works, it really spoke to me to say, what is life without theatre arts? You know, when you're looking for a purpose and you're looking for an answer to the question to be or not to be, if you're looking for a reason to live, for us, theatre is that reason.
I liked it just because it looked good. This is nice creative.
You thought it was cool.
But, you know, if you get more from it.
What can I say? I'm a deep thinker.
So my next question to you both is there anything that you would bequeath to us if you could, or that you think we should collect to continue telling Shakespeare's story in the 21st century?
We've had a good chat about this, and we feel it's quite relevant, actually, with recent revelations.
Well, there's always been debate about Shakespeare's sexuality. And I think in 2020, it's now time to sort of embrace those ideas that he may not have been a cisgendered heterosexual man more than ever before. And I think an acceptance of society that may have played a part in Shakespeare's character and subsequently his work is something that should be celebrated as much as spoken about with a sort of, I feel previously, with a sort of embarrassment almost of acknowledging that he may have been, you know, if you want to pigeonhole him, bisexual, and if you want to sort of apply a more modern terminology to him, perhaps pansexual, perhaps not limited by gender, of how he wished to express his love and desires, both physical and spiritual. So I think it's time to display somewhere in your collection a pride flag, a rainbow pride flag, stenciled on top with an outline with a silhouette of Shakespeare at the centre of it, to celebrate the growing acceptance that he may have had, you know, amorous feelings or lustful feelings towards people of both genders.
We obviously keep the Shakespeare homes as part of our collection as well. And if you could choose one of them in which to live, which one might you choose? And I recognise that you might not both choose the same one.
Well, do you know, we did have a bit of a debate, actually, as to whether we'd stay in the same place. But we did we did come up with an agreement in the end.
I think as we're quite... We're city dwellers. It doesn't really appeal to live on a farm. It doesn't really appeal to live out in the sticks.
No.
We want to be right
be doing with that.
In the centre of where things happen.
Absolutely.
So assuming that we wouldn't be transported back in time and Shakespeare's birthplace, the actual house, was surrounded by nothing, assuming that we'd move in there now and right outside we'd have life going on and cafes and shops and be just around the corner from the theatre.
And hopefully a dedicated parking space.
And hopefully a dedicated parking space, because parking in Stratford can be tricky at times. Then I think we'd want to live at his birthplace just because it feels like the centre of town.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you both. Thank you so much. And may we wish you all the very best with the Breakerleggers. For Nathan and Simon, pieces that celebrate Shakespeare and pride would be invaluable. So what would you like to deposit into the collections of the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust? Something real or imaginary? We'd love to hear from you via shakespeare.org.uk/future. And while you're there, please consider completing our short survey so we can produce more of the content that you like. Thank you for listening to this season of Shakespeare Alive. We'll be back after Christmas. Take care all. Farewell.